this is Damien O'Doherty with Center Maryland's The Lobby Pod. We have something special for you today. I'm calling it the Young Guns Podcast. You've heard from some of the biggest veterans in Maryland lobbying history, whether it's Jerry Evans or Gene Ransom. We heard from Nicole Stallings, just a wonderful bunch of people that have been around doing this business for quite a time. Now I've got the best and brightest from Annapolis Estate Circle. We've got PK Owusu. She's from the Maryland State Education Association, which should roll off my tongue a little easier than that. That's the teachers, obviously one of the most important voices in Annapolis. Then we have Neil Carcahanis, is from Funk and Bolton, big time firm that's been operating in the legislative space a long time ago. When I was coming up, it was had a big insurance focus as well as a legislative focus. And then we got Greg Snyder from the Bellamy Gen Group. Want to welcome all three of you and thank you so much for joining us on Center Maryland.
Thanks for having us, Damien.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Neil.
Damien.
What have you been working on this session?
What haven't we all been working on this session? It's been a wild one. First of all, thanks for having all of us. I've been a big fan of yours and you know, following a lot of your good work over the last few years and, you know, beyond. So it's an honor to be here. Thank you. You know, Funk and Bolton, we're a lobbying and a legal shop. So we do both the lobbying and the legal work. I'm a lawyer, but I don't actually really practice law, but I do lobby all the time. I'm basically a career lobbyist at this point. And as you said, we've had a long-time insurance focus. So we run and staff an entity called the League of Life and Health Insurers, and that's made up of basically, if not all, almost all of the life and health insurance providers in the state. We also have some property and casualty insurance clients. But then beyond that, we take on other clients. I mean, our background, the folks that are on our lobby team, Matt Celentano, Eddie Pounds, Phil Konjerski, and myself, we really have a health expertise background more than anything else. So we take on a lot of public health clients. We worked on a campaign for the campaign for tobacco-free kids to take on the flavored tobacco epidemic this past session. So that was a tough one. We worked on a bill that would try to expand some of the beer and alcohol and wine licenses to grocery stores and food deserts. So and I even worked on an issue that had to do with solar panels for a city. So it's a lot of different stuff, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, hats off. I'm sure everybody is pleased to hear you've been doing public health and what may have been something that people glossed over or thought was not as integral, quickly learned in the last year that public health is the name of the game. So thanks for being such an important resource there.
Of course.
PK, 2020 Maryland Daily Record VIP. That's you. Talk to me about what the teachers are focused on now. It seems like you had an incredibly successful session. Love to hear a little bit about it.
Yeah, no, thanks, Damien, and thanks for having me on. Honored to be here with my fellow young guns, I guess. But at MSCA, we've been really focused, as many people, if you aren't familiar with MSCA, we're the Maryland State Education Association. So we have over 76,000 members, which include teachers, education support professionals, which run the gamut from your administrative aides to your speech language pathologists to your bus drivers and cafeteria workers. So we work for everyone. And so this session, I don't think it's been a secret to anyone. We were really trying to override the governor's veto of the blueprint, which was a piece of legislation that really just sets the blueprint for putting Maryland back in number one place in education in the country. And so we were really successful with that, as well as some revisions that had to occur for Blueprint 2.0, which really helps the blueprint meet the moment with COVID and, you know, some learning losses that we had, and speeding up funding for supplemental education during the summer for our students. We also worked on some progressive tax policies to fund, you know, Kerwin. So, I mean, we had a pretty successful session. We've been pretty supportive of some other coalition bills, like the collective bargaining bill for community colleges, which is a really big win. That's gone in, I think, the past 7 or 8 years. And so we're really excited to see that pass out of both chambers. So I think it is fair to say we've had a pretty good session, and we're excited for some more work to come.
I think I want to speak for parents out there, really all over the country, that we had our own challenges trying to get our kids ready for school and do asynchronous learning. And, you know, I think the moment we all felt a little frustration or a tinge of concern about how we were adapting in this COVID situation, we then instantly thought, but we don't have 26 other of these to manage right now. And I think a lot of us just had a chance to understand a little bit, be a little bit more in the shoes of the teachers over the last year for me. And I think so many others, it gave us just that much more sense of gratitude. So thank you for being the front lines for people that are really the front lines for us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always said before I even took this job, I'm the child of an educator. So they've always been like superheroes to me. And I think, like you said, COVID really in this pandemic has like highlighted how important and necessary they are in our society.
Gregory, we're on to you. Bellamy Jed Group. They've been operators in the state capitol for as long as I've been around. You were in the Hogan administration. You worked on the Senate side. I think you worked for two state senators, which is exactly how I came up, but on the other side of the aisle. And then I learned you were the 2019 Ravens quarterback of the year, community quarterback of the year. That's not too shabby of an award.
Thanks, Damian. I really appreciate that. So like Neil and PK, government relations work is really important to me. So this session, two of the clients that I've been on the lead on are the Maryland Academy of Audiology and the Enoch Pratt Free Library. The Enoch Pratt Free Library in 2015, after the unrest in Baltimore City, really stepped up and was a resource to many different communities throughout Baltimore City. And because of that, Speaker Mike Bush realized the importance the library played in the community and thought it would be great for expanded hours and services for the Enoch Pratt Free Libraries throughout Baltimore City. So that program was set to sunset in 2022. And this year, our big push was getting that funding level funded in perpetuity. So the legislature saw the resource that the Enoch Pratt Free Library was during the unrest in Baltimore, and even during the COVID-19 crisis, they've been providing mobile hotspots for different communities throughout Baltimore City. They've been providing tablets for school students that need access to those. So they've really been a tremendous resource for their communities, and the legislature decided to give them $3 million a year in perpetuity to be able to continue that expanded hours and services for their constituents. So that is one bill that I've really been working on. And Maryland Academy of Audiology is looking to introduce audiology assistance into the healthcare arena. Again, with COVID, we've seen access to care is so important and providing services for people in all areas of the state. So in some of our more rural areas of the state, audiologists, there's only one for like the whole Eastern Shore. So being able to add two audiology assistants per licensed audiologists would allow the audiologists to practice their high scope of care and allow the audiology assistants to be able to help more patients with some of the more routine stuff. So those are some of the issues I've been working on, but I appreciate you mentioning the Community Quarterback Award. Government relations work is extremely important to me, but community service and giving back to the community is also something that I'm very passionate about. So involved in the Ronald McDonald House Charities in Maryland, involved in the board of the Arkansas Central Chesapeake Region, and also involved in a brain cancer nonprofit called Keep Punching. And I think that's something cool about our generation is we're very passionate about government relations, but we each do stuff outside of our work as well. I know Neil is in an awesome band and PK is very involved in the Greater Washington Community Foundation. So I think that's something that's very cool that we are dedicated and very interested in our careers, but we're also have outside interests that are meaningful as well.
Well, let's get to the fun stuff. Neil, talk to me how you went from being young Neil in school to then going on to work for people like the Health Facilities Association of Maryland. So for people who don't know that, that's Joe DeMatos, a former chief of staff to the Hawaii governor. He knows leadership like nobody else. Talk to me about how you go from being a young kid growing up to working with some of the best politicos we have around. What's the progression for you?
Thanks for asking, Damian. I mean, I think the big thing for me has been I've had no idea what I've been doing most of the time, and that's helped me tremendously. You know, and I think a lot of us fake it till we make it, and I'm faking it a lot. But Joe's been a big part, big important part of my life. He's been a mentor to me for a long time. When I was an undergrad at UMBC, I got a great opportunity to intern with the AARP state office in Baltimore, where Joe at the time was the state director. And Joe really took care of me. I mean, at that time, I was paying my way through school. You know, I was working desk staff for like $7 an hour at the dorm. And he was able to fight for me to get me like a somewhat livable salary as an intern. You know, I was able to get like a PhD level salary. And so that was, or hourly rate rather. So that was really, really helpful. But then beyond that, it was just learning and being able to sort of shadow someone that really knows what they're doing. So I had that great opportunity. And when I graduated from undergrad, it was 2009. And so there was, unfortunately, some economic challenges at the time. It was tough for folks to get jobs, tough for folks to stick around, tough for folks to get high paying jobs. But Joe, at the same time, my good fortune, he wound up being selected as the CEO of the Health Facilities Association of Maryland. And he offered me my first like real big boy job right out of school. And it was a 1/3 receptionist duties, 1/3 just like program coordinator, which is like putting together all the events and making sure people are registered for educational events, because trade groups like that do continuing education events. And then 1/3 policy. So really only about 1/3 of it was like the actual policy work. But I quickly learned that, you know, you got to swallow your pride or ego, what little I had at the time, and just do the work and just be open to doing whatever. And I've sort of approached my career that way ever since. And so I've had a really, really exciting career at this point. Got to work with HFAM, got to work on Capitol Hill for consumers. I heard you interviewed Nicole Stallings on this show. I was with the Maryland Hospital Association for a couple of years as well as one of their in-house lobbyists.
We all just want to have our act really together like Nicole, right? That's all we want in life.
I know.
But it takes so much work.
if there's one person that will like get your booty in gear for an 8 a.m. Monday morning meeting, it's Nicole Stallings. I have tremendous respect for her, and I've had just such a blessing for me to be surrounded by real pros all the time. Even my group now, Eddie Pounds, Matt Celentano, those guys are real pros that have been doing it longer than me. And so I've just been learning and sort of getting lucky and accepting the fact that most of the time I have no idea what I'm doing.
Fair enough. I love it. PK, you know, you get to work for somebody that I have known since my first day working for Baltimore County Executive Jim Smith. There was all this talk that the longtime star TABCO president Abby Baiton was moving on to new part of her life, and there was this dynamic young teacher that was coming into the role to lead the Baltimore County teachers. Her name Cheryl Bost. She's now the head of the Maryland State Education Association. So tell me how young PK came up from as my friend Don Moeller likes to say, from being a little girl to get into work with people like Cheryl Bost and Sean Johnson every day.
Yeah, no, it's actually funny. I think Neil spoke a lot to what it's like to do government affairs. I think a lot of it is pulling up ready to do the work, but also getting lucky or just kind of figuring things out. So I come from a legal background, like similar to Neil. I went to University of Baltimore for law school. And we're both alumni there. Freddie Gray was like, and Trayvon Martin were pivotal moments for me. I knew that I had an interest in like you know, criminal justice reform and police reform, and just overhaul of communities in general, specifically within communities of color. But those cases specifically happening during law school kind of made me pivot and decide how I wanted to use my legal education. So after Trayvon Martin happened, actually after my 1L year, I interned with the public defender's office and their government affairs office. And I was like, whoa, this is really cool. I get to like use my legal knowledge, but I can kind of be on the front side instead of trying to use the law to like, you know, come up with something for a client, a result for a client, using it on the other side to kind of make the law or adjust it. So I did that, and I was really involved in like Prince George's County Young Dems on the executive board. And there was an opportunity. There was someone on the executive board with me who was the chief of staff then for Senator Joanne Benson in Senate Finance. And she had an internship coming up, and this was like my 3L year. And I was just like, okay, I'll give it a shot. So I interned with her, and I mean, the rest has just been history. Learning from someone like her who's been around the game for a while, she has quite a few tricks up her sleeve, and I've been just really fortunate and blessed to learn from her and other folks along my journey. And it really just set me up to, you know, kind of sit in the back and take notes on how the work is done. So from there, I kind of went to working for Senator Van Hollen when he, you know, moved from the House to the Senate, and really got to know the state a lot more. I originally went into that job just trying to cover Prince George's County. But due to some staff changes, I ended up covering pretty much from St. Mary's up to Anne Arundel. So I really got to know a lot of folks in the state, and I really got like a knack for it. And as I transitioned from like working for electeds, I was just like, well, I can do the government affairs side. And so that's kind of how I ended up here, working at MSEA with Cheryl and Sean, who are just both like legends in their respective roles. I mean, Cheryl's just, she's strong and she's smart and she's sharp and she's fierce when you meet her. She's very passionate and advocates for, you know, her members. And Sean, I mean, he's just incredible. I mean, there's no one else that, I've seen who's been able to do what he's done at MSEA, and I'm just honored to learn under their tutelage. But I mean, there's also other folks, I think, that like Neil has mentioned, that have been really helpful. The community, I think, in Annapolis, I can't speak to how it was, you know, I've listened to some of your shows when some other people were coming up, but I feel like now it's pretty open, and folks that are around want to help young people. It's not so, it's competitive, of course, but they don't want you to make some of the same mistakes that they made, and they want to make sure that your path can be a little bit easier. So folks have really kind of helped guide me on my path, and that's just how I ended up where I am.
Okay, thanks so much. That was great. Greg, I'm going to try to sit in your shoes a little bit. You're in the state Senate. You're a young person. You're looking around. You're a staff person for a state senator, and you're thinking, I'd like to get into this game. So talk to me about what your view of the world was and what you were thinking at the time, and talk to me about how that relates to where you are now.
So growing up, politics and government has always been something I've been passionate about. My family's very politically active, studied political science and government in college. So when I graduated college in 2014, I knew I wanted to get into politics somehow. So I basically would just email every opportunity I saw. And Senator Justin Reedy was just appointed to the state Senate to fill the seat of now Judge Getty. I reached out to him and his team, explaining my background, how I'd love to get involved in state and local government. And he responded very quickly, met with him the next week, and the rest is history. So I really appreciate him for getting my foot in the door, because I think half the battle is getting your foot in the door. Once you're able to get your foot in the door and start making those connections and experiences, I think it makes your path a lot easier. So from there, I went to work for Senator Salling, who's Fulton County, went to go work for Maryland Department of Transportation, MTA, and then now I'm at Bellamy Jen Group as a in-house lobbyist there. And I never would have imagined I'd be in the lobbying world, but it's really been a great experience. I've been able to learn from people like Neil and PK, who are total pros and universally admired and respected in our circles. And one thing I like about this side of things is you're able to take on issues that are in line with your values and belief systems. So like the Enoch Pratt Free Library, Maryland Academy of Audiology, some of our other clients, Everytown for Gun Safety, NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund is a new client of ours. So they've been very involved in a lot of the police reform work. But being able to learn from two people like Lorenzo and Gil has also been a great experience. You walk into Gil Jen's office and he has pictures with every elected official ever. And just hearing his experiences and what he's been through is pretty cool. And then Lorenzo is just the most awesome, caring boss. He's really taken me under his wing and probably one of the best bosses I've ever had as far as providing me opportunities and allowing me to grow and reach my full potential. So having two leaders like that, the head of the firm, really, I think, has made this job extremely rewarding.
Neil and PK, talk to me about, how, like, let's say I'm your age. I'm meeting people for coffee around State Circle. I'm running my gums up, in the State House. You know, I'm talking to the people in the mess hall, you know, running into people at Potato Valley, you know, and that's before happy hour. So talk to me about how you all are doing your networking and how you all are getting a sense of what's going on. You know, I'd love to hear how you're managing that now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, I just want to sort of reemphasize some of the things that PK and Greg said. You know, I think that it's clear that at least the three of us are super humble, which I think is super, very, very important when you go to Potato Valley, you need some humble pie every now and then. but, you know, PK mentioned a few adjectives, strong, sharp, fierce. You know, she described, I think, Sean Johnson with those adjectives, but like, I would describe PK with those adjectives, you know, and I think it's so important for the three of us, but also others that are sort of in this group, this age group, if you will, to have strong friendships and foundations with each other, because we do rely on each other a lot in terms of just A, learning, B, knowing what's going on, and C, like, having someone watch your back. It's super, super important. I had a situation a couple of years ago where I had a client that suddenly wanted a bill to be dropped, and they, you know, of course they had all of interim to figure this whole thing out, but they didn't, and they wanted to get it done. And the deadline was maybe the next day. And so I'm like, okay, well, I got to figure this thing out. And I didn't have a sponsor at the time. And so I had 24 hours to turn it around, get a bill, you know, get the bill drafted, sponsored and dropped, which is very, very, very difficult. And, you guys all know, I'm sure, Brad Rifkin, and I'm just like walking around State Circle sort of in panic mode, trying to figure out what to do, run into Brad. He says, what's up? How you doing? Like, I have this situation. I'm not sure what to do. And he's like, oh, you know, you can just get like a legislator to put their name on it and drop it in for you. And just as like a whole. And I didn't know that. And that's like a simple, like, procedural thing that I never knew. But Brad, who works at a competing firm in a lot of ways, filled me in and like educated me. And I just think that's super important. So relationships are super critical.
We'll see what his dad thinks of that story. I think he'll be proud.
Right. And so, like, in terms of navigating the social world now, it's obviously very different. Everything you described in terms of Annapolis are things that I haven't seen at all, because I haven't been there at all, literally. It's all been virtual. It's been a lot like this, being on Zooms and getting things done. I think PK, Greg, and I, and some of the folks that are on the younger end, at least where we've been around a little bit and we haven't pissed enough people off yet, but they're still returning our calls, I think. And so it's been really a good thing that, you know, we're all connected and have people's cell phone numbers and things like that. I'm personally still really well connected with a lot of staffers and other lobbyists and things like that. And so I'm able to get together with them in a socially distant sort of way, but I've been personally, I've been like incredibly cautious given A, the pandemic, and B, the fact that I do public health work. You know, it just wouldn't be the right move to be hanging out at the bar. But just being in constant contact and asking people what they need, not asking them for stuff that I need, has been really helpful throughout this session.
PK, I want to hear about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, first place meal is going to make me cry on a podcast, but that was really nice. But yeah, no, like, I think he really harped in on an important part, like the relationships are important. And I think the three of us here, we're very fortunate to this not be our first session, right? We get to have these relationships that exist outside of a pandemic world. So it's maintaining them and really, like Neil said, like checking in with folks and seeing how you can be helpful, not waiting till, you know, there's an ask. But yeah, I can't lie. It's definitely been difficult. It's weird. I used to work next to Potato Valley when I worked for County Executive Ulcer Brooks.
You picked some good ones, PK.
I like to pick winners. but yeah, no, I like miss Barb, seeing Barb and seeing everyone come into Potato Valley. And, you know, there's a culture caucus and just a whole bunch of stuff where you get to see a lot of folks and, you know, keep up the social aspect. But it's a pandemic, so we really do have to be cautious. And I'm sure there'll be times in the future where we get to do that. But in the meantime, it's just finding ways to connect through the old form of email writing and phone calls and text.
You know, I've really learned from people your age when I was raising money for the Democratic governors and former Governor O'Malley's pursuits across the country. You know, I ran into people that were, you know, in your age cohort, and I just saw them all the time. It was them, a suit and a tie and a phone. And, you know, I knew they had a hometown, but they were on the road all the time and they were masters of the device. And so, you know, PK and Greg, I'm wondering, you know, you guys are sort of the device generation. Does that give you like a supreme advantage because you're able to like hook into a Facebook that, you know, a Gil might look at you and say, I don't even know what you're talking about. Or are there certain advantages because of your social and tech savvy that give your age group, you know, a leg up, or you find yourself teaching your mentors, or are they showing you the old way to do it since some of those opportunities may have broken down? I'd love to hear about that.
I definitely think, especially at the start of the pandemic, there was definitely a change as far as what was important. So communicating with clients, couldn't do it in a traditional sense. So what are we gonna do? Zoom calls and everything. So I think that it added value to myself and my younger colleague, Riley Shoebridge, to our older bosses, because they aren't as tech savvy as us. So setting up this means for us to communicate with our clients was hugely beneficial, especially at the start of COVID, and just finding new ways to adapt and change, because everyone's lives have changed the past year totally, whether that's communication with clients, also processes during the General Assembly. So instead of going in person to submitting testimony, it's all online now. So that was challenging for a lot of folks. All the voting sessions are live streamed now, which is really nice, being able to have that to access and send to clients and take notes on. So I definitely think there are things that have come of this that will, for the long term, be better. And I hope they keep some of these processes in place that make things more efficient for people and use technology to its advantage.
You guys agree with that, Neil, PK?
Yeah, no, I think Greg's absolutely right. I think it also adds a layer of transparency to a process that a lot of folks are not familiar with. But I mean, I think Neil and Greg might agree with me. Like in government affairs, your contacts and your relations are really the currency. So though some of our colleagues might have struggled, you know, initially, like with getting off of mute, like we all struggle with that.
Being no able offense to have taken.
no, I was struggling with it when we first started, but I think being able to just pick up the phone and call someone, like having the contact.
You're talking about the telephone. Look at you. All right.
Yeah. I mean, that's the currency, right? Having someone be like, being able to have that contact that, you know, they'll rely, they'll pick up and not say like, who's this, like, or whatever, is more the currency in government affairs. So I think in terms of that, that could be something that, you know, some of our older colleagues might have an advantage on. But I really think that tech is here to stay. I think some folks might have thought it was impossible to do what we do for work remotely. And the pandemic has proven that incorrect, right? Which hopefully will open opportunities for, you know, other folks to do this work, because it's really great work and it really is impactful in our communities. So that's kind of how I see it. I'm interested to hear what Neil has to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think in some respects it's good, and it's going to be here to stay in terms of Zoom and transparency and, you know, access to you know, public voting and things like that. I think it's all helpful. I think texting is always good. You can get stuff done pretty easily and quickly and efficiently. The problem is that, you know, maybe Greg experiences this too. As a contract lobbyist, you're hired a lot of times to have tough conversations. And, you know, in terms of counting votes, you pretty much know where your yes votes are and your no votes are most of the time, if you're doing your job right. It's those ones in between that are tough. And that's where you have to have the tough conversation, whether it's about the policy or the politics or just straight up where, you know, what type of day that person's having. And for those, in the event that you're pushing a bill that you need a yes vote on, it's easier for those leaning no votes to ignore you and to be really, really tough to get a hold of. Whereas, you know, if we're having in-person session, I'm camping outside your office. You know, I'm going to be hanging outside Potato Valley because I know what time you like to get a baked potato. So there's things that you just can't do that, you know, I've been able to do and other lobbyists have been able to do for the last, you know, for many decades. But, and that's what makes, you know, the tougher issues that much harder, I think. I think the slam dunk issues, you know, our access is definitely there and it's easy, but for those ones that people just don't really want to do unless you force them to, it's tough to do it just from a cell phone.
I definitely agree with that. I think for those that are elusive and avoiding you for whatever reason, probably because they don't want to support your bill, the virtual world makes that a little more challenging, whereas you're not allowed to wait for them in the state house steps or wait for them outside their office or wait for them before they're going to a voting session. One thing I wanted to add while we're talking about virtual stuff and everything, one thing that Gil and Lorenzo have instilled in me is, and I guess this might be kind of old school, is the importance of a handwritten note. I found that to be very effective in my job, whether that's sending a handwritten note to a client or a thank you note to one of our bill sponsors. That's something I try to do. And I think it's kind of a lost art that I appreciate and I've come to appreciate.
Hey, you send and mail the note, or I saw a pretty clever trick where I saw somebody write the handwritten note and then they emailed it to me. I thought that was a little best of both worlds.
I try to mail it.
Try to mail it. This year's been a little rough on the mail.
It has.
Let me try to steal some insight from y'all. You know, we all have these devices. They all have different platforms. You know, like LinkedIn, I just try to raise my hand almost like I'm in a corporate lobby and kind of put up the little sign, you know, KO Public Affairs, this is what we do. Try to do a little storytelling. Instagram, I don't know what to do with yet. Facebook, I've used a lot just to stay in sort of my hometown mode and connect with legislators that I kind of came up with. You know, there's Snapchat out there, there's your text. PK talked about the old fashioned telephone call. Love to hear what your arbitrage is for communicating with clients or legislators or advocates. Like, what is your personal ethic for how you leverage all those different platforms?
So I think in terms of talking to, like, communicating with legislators, I try to keep it to the formal, more formal. I want a written record. Maybe that's the law school in me. But like in terms of how we activate our members on issues and bills that we think are important, we use our comms team uses a lot of like social media. So whether that be Twitter, advertising on Instagram and Spotify and all these apps, it really engages people and gets them involved in the issues. But I will say I've seen a lot more legislators, especially the more younger legislators, use Twitter a lot more and Instagram. So I think that'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. You can see fights go on the floor on Twitter. It's pretty interesting. But yeah, like in terms of like everyday contact with legislators, I try to keep it more on the formal email phone person.
Yeah, I mean, I listened to your, Damien, I listened to, I think it was episode one of In the Lobby. Was it with Capstrat? Was that the one?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
If my memory serves me. And, you know, a lot of what they were talking about was an integrated communication sort of strategy with you know, your political strategy. And that's a lot of what we do in terms of trying to get stuff done. So we'll work with a comms firm, or we'll work with a social media firm, or we'll work with someone that's really good at polling or grassroots or things like that. And we'll integrate a comms strategy in terms of like a public facing campaign. And I think that's really important. I mean, you can use all the social media handles for that, and create some sort of like community sort of facing entity, coalition, if you will. And Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff is good. Twitter's great because the legislators are using it all the time. So you could tweet at them. You can have your coalition tweet at them. Facebook
is Dylan Goldberg as nice in person as he is on Twitter?
He's awesome. Dylan.
Yes.
Dylan Goldberg's a freaking sweetheart. I mean, that guy is a state treasure.
He really is.
He is. He's like a giant teddy bear. He's actually even nicer in person. So
yeah, and his Instagram's fun. You know, I think he was sailing yesterday, I want to say. but in terms of private communication, you know, like PK, I like to keep it kind of professional in terms of email and all that. But sometimes you got to talk to someone about something, you know, you just need to make a phone call for. So, you know, for me personally, it's whatever it takes. I've seen PK host groups on this thing called Clubhouse, which I think is cool. I'm more of a lurker than a talker in that forum. But I think that's a really great way to build community. So kudos, PK.
PK, I think that's the one. Talk about Clubhouse. I think this is, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I was trying to create this podcast, The Lobby, just to get some sense of the bon ami and fun that we all have, you know, pulling a couple people together and talking in the side of the halls. And then I saw Clubhouse. I was like, I should have just done Clubhouse instead of this silly podcast, right? So it's a question sometimes of, which platform you choose.
Yeah, no, it's funny that Neil brought up Clubhouse. So I'm proud to say I was an early adopter to Clubhouse due to friends who work in the tech industry who gave me an invite. So I've been on since last August or September.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I actually created a group it's a club. They have like clubs where you can talk about different subject matter, different experts or non-experts or whatever. And we created this club called the Maryland Politics Room. So we normally go in there during session and just talk shop about like what's going on. We've had quite a few electeds like come in from around the state and just, you know, talk shop about, you know, predictions for 22 and all this other stuff. But it's a really cool and formal way to just kind of hear people's thoughts without the pressure of having to be on camera or, you know, like a recording of it happening. So it's a now, really
could I, but I can't record that what you did and put it on Center Maryland for the 50 somethings in our world that don't get on Clubhouse. Is there a way to record it and then put it up?
Yeah, no. So Clubhouse, like I think the thing with Clubhouse is as long as you alert people that you are doing a recording, you are allowed to record on there. So people do podcasts, some of their podcasts from there. So you can totally do that. It's
well,
a really
I'd love cool. you to think about next time you do one of your rooms, shooting me the link and we could get it to the old people like me the next day on their email.
Absolutely. But you're not old. You can be a day over 31. So
I'll take it. Greg, you better step in here because PK's winning me over. When you look at this group, Greg, you know, if I was looking at this group, I'd say, wow, you know, PK gets to work with Cheryl and, you know, Neil's got HFAM's got a couple of these big healthcare clients. Maybe I could find a way to show them what we do in social media. Greg, when you're a lobbyist and you're interacting with your colleagues, how do you consider business development or career opportunity as you engage these folks? Because you brought quite a crowd to the table today. Thank you.
Yeah. So as far as business development, obviously during COVID, it's been a little more challenging. But one thing that we have found to be pretty beneficial is attending like different virtual networking events or virtual events. So, for example, we recently got a client from attending the Daily Records Indianapolis Virtual Summit. We sponsored the event, and someone had messaged us in the message board asking about what we did. So we were able to ping them and set up a Zoom meeting with them the next day and engage them. So I think during COVID, you just need to find ways to adapt. Obviously, we don't have the traditional like in-person receptions, in-person networking events. So it's a lot of adapting here. And one thing I wanted to touch on as far as communications, for our firm, that's something that's very important as far as keeping our clients in the loop. So every day we typically send our clients basically roundup of what's going on in State Circle. So what legislation has passed the past day, any news going on throughout the state, whether that's vaccine distribution or COVID-19 announcements. And then for any of our clients who are specifically monitoring a bill, so like the police reform bills, my colleague Riley Shoebridge sends out detailed minute-by-minute notes on what's going on in the police reform discussion. So for us, communication is key. To some, it may be over-communication, but I think you can never really over-communicate and keep your clients in the loop. So that's just something that we've found to be important and beneficial for not only us, but our clients.
And I love you give you a little dose of Damien reality here. So I think I went on like Corey McRae had a cool fundraiser because he had like these cool community advocates that kind of popped up on the screen and talked. It just wasn't your usual, you know, fundraiser. So I'm loving these new content schemes that the legislators are coming up instead of having the junior U.S. senator and the congressperson and the county executive at their event. They're doing some really cool things. Jessica Feldmark had an event where she featured some of the new restaurants that are going in at Catonsville, Fadley's and places like that. And so, but I noticed right after that, like that the other legislators that were being gracious and joining their legislative call, then I got their fundraisers call immediately, if not while I was in the meeting. And so I was like, man, I wonder if this is going to promote my participation or if it's going to limit my participation, if that is the piggyback guarantee that we get. Any other any cautions you have for me in that regard?
So I'm sure we'll start, Neil and I will be starting getting calls on Tuesday as far as upcoming fundraisers and things going on. It's really funny how a lot of these legislators adapted and create events. I know for me, one of the more fun Zoom fundraisers I attended was Delegate Ariana Kelly's. She had like a TikTok themed one. And because of that fundraiser, I downloaded TikTok and am like obsessed with TikTok now. It's pretty bad. I haven't gotten a Clubhouse like PK yet. I guess I'll have to download that today. But just seeing how they've adapted and come up with some creative ways to get people interested in their events, I think that's pretty cool. But
I'm the best person who has adapted most to this situation. I can't believe it. Just how well they've done. And Greg, you probably haven't been on many of these, but the Maryland Democratic Party has done a fabulous job, whether it's having like a, you know, they had like a ball that people really attended, dressed up for, to their trustee meetings. Everything they've done, the convention, the Maryland convention that they did, the Maryland version of the national convention, you know, it was just incredible. My hat's off to them. PK, you see any good stuff out there before we close out with your favorite frontline story?
Yeah, no, we also get a lot of fundraising requests too. So I'm sure they're gonna start piling post-session. I think one of my favorites though was Delegate Pena Melnack did a bingo one, which was kind of cool. I think after a while you get kind of bored. Just, I know a lot of legislators like seeing everyone and you can chat and it makes it informal. But I don't know if many people know this about me, but I'm actually naturally an introvert. So situations like that bring me a lot of anxiety. So it's nice to have some type of activity where, you know, you can socialize with folks and get to hear about their policies or like, you know, what they're doing in Annapolis while still having an activity and not just staring at a screen of people's faces. So
she seems like the biggest sort of non-obvious star. And by that, I mean, everybody say Maryland General Assembly, you know, they talk about the presiding officers, you know, they'll throw Maggie out there, some other names from the Senate maybe, but Pena Melnick really has a remarkable reputation across all the sectors that I've been dealing with.
Absolutely.
And so it's nice to see that she reflects that in her fundraising events.
Whenever she's a floor leader, she's very like—
Neil. Okay.
I was gonna say, whenever she's the floor leader on a bill, she's always very captivating and like impressive in her work. And
looking for is badass. She's a badass.
Yes.
Neil,
it's been determined. Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm gonna let you guys go, but I'd love if anybody wanted to chime in, if they had a nod to any of our frontline workers, had a good anecdote, or just anything you thought might be useful for the audience to hear from the young guns when it comes to the frontline workers.
I mean, I'll just say that, you know, I'm Bezos and all the political issues aside, I've really enjoyed getting Amazon Prime delivered to me. Like I have not gone to a grocery store in person in like over a year. And that's been really great. You know, just have your food delivered. So all those people that are picking out my groceries and delivering it to my door, thank you so much. You've kept me alive. I appreciate it.
There you go.
I have to say, the development of the vaccine and whatnot is a huge feat. Today I'm actually getting my first dose. So I encourage everyone listening, when you can, get vaccinated. It's really important. I'm just extremely thankful for the nurses and doctors and healthcare providers who have really had a challenging year, but have really stepped up and really should be commended for the work they had done the past year.
Yeah, no, I kind of want to repeat what Neil and Greg said, just very fortunate for all of our frontline workers. I mean, regardless of industry. So my heritage is, my family's from Ghana and West Africa, and I'm first gen. And it's very much, there's a saying that says it takes a village. And so I think our frontline workers have really stepped up to the front of the village during this pandemic and made it so all of us could, you know, kind of try to continue with life as normal. And a lot of them have taken the ultimate sacrifice in putting their health and safety ahead to really just make sure that we can have some of the simple necessities in life. And for that, I am forever grateful. And like Greg said, if you have the opportunity to get vaccinated, please do. I think it's the way that we can really get ahead of this.
Yeah, I'd be remiss to say, please get vaccinated, and just echoing all these sentiments. On top of that, bus drivers, Uber drivers, restaurant workers, all these people that have just like continued to be badasses themselves and like keep us going. We wouldn't be where we are without you. So thank you so much.
Sounds like badasses is the term for the young guns. Much appreciated. Colloquialisms are loved here on the pod. And just wanted to thank PK Owusu, Neil Carcajanes, and Greg Snyder for joining us. And Greg, thanks so much for getting this group together for me. Greg poked me early on, just to show you, poked me early on about the show. And so, you know, I really view Center Maryland as an open source kind of thing. It's tough. If it's ever not open source, it's because it's a side project for us. It's nobody's full-time job. But, you know, any way you all ever want to plug into to this platform, we welcome you. And we're so grateful for everything you're doing, not just for your family and your team and your firms and in your association, but for the frontline workers that you're all working there for, like PK, you've got the teachers, and Greg, I think you named three or four of them. So I just can't thank you all enough.
And I'll just add, Damien, I really appreciate the invitation. I messaged you just like saying how big of a fan I am of yours and your work. And I've been following Center Maryland for years. It's been a great news source for myself. And I know a lot of other people in the Annapolis sphere, and really been a fan of your podcasts, and really appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah, no.
Thank you all. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, Damien, yeah. Center Maryland got me really through that first year working for Senator Van Hollen, because I was able to learn everything about everywhere. So thank you.
You know what I got for that? My reward for that was that Senator Van Hollen took my favorite KO professional that I've ever met, Destiny Easton. And now she's the press secretary for the junior senator, Chris Van Hollen. So I'm honored by that. He's an amazing, amazing player on the stage. And you all are as well. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much. Yeah.